Welcome to another edition of SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, AMS, and many others. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, I want to skip back a couple days to the weekend when Paul Ryan made an appearance on statewide television talking to Mike Gushee. And Mike Gushee asked him a couple questions, and I want your reaction to Paul Ryan's reaction. I'll play these two clips. Here's clip number one.
Has the president been helpful in this process?
Yeah,
he calls you into the Rose Garden and praises you for passage of it, and the next day calls it mean.
Yeah, that was helpful. Yeah, he's had a few slips of the tongue, that's for sure, on things like that. Calling it mean, I think, is just, I just fundamentally disagree with this. I don't think he believes that either, actually. I think he's been extremely engaging and helpful in that he's been working on trying to get members of Congress to yes. He had the senators down there for a lunch just the other day. They restarted their talks. That's because he re-kickstarted conversations in the Senate to get this going. So actually, he's been very helpful in getting people to talk to one another to come to solutions. And that's been the kind of engagement he's had on this issue is more than I've seen any president engage in an issue.
John?
Well, I like the notion that calling it mean is a slip of the tongue. Because that seems to be going around.
It
that slip of the tongue condition.
Yeah.
might want to try and come up with a treatment for that. Because I was in Washington yesterday.
Uh-huh.
My condolences. Weather was decent. I was at some of the Senate office buildings.
Uh-huh.
And you could not get in or out very easily. Because many of the entrances were being blocked by disability rights activists who were doing what I think was necessary and noble civil disobedience to try and communicate to senators that many of the things that were being proposed could lead to the loss of their freedom or their death. And so this notion that the legislation is mean,
mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a slip of the tongue, because I just don't think mean is a descriptive enough term.
Here is another clip of Paul Ryan Sunday on the Mike Gushee Show.
But the crux of the criticism is that you've lost touch. You've become the Washington guy. And Randy Bryce on this program a few weeks ago made the claim that you had not done a public town hall in more than 600 days. Now, PolitiFact ran that today and said it's mostly true.
Yeah.
So I want to have you respond to the people who say, why won't you do that?
First of all, you get that kind of criticism when you get this kind of a job. You become Speaker of the House with expanded responsibilities. You're going to get that kind of criticism. Second of all, there are extra security current concerns that come with this kind of job for doing those kinds of public events. The other point is, it's very clear to us that activists from outside of the district want to bus people in to disrupt our town hall meetings. And it's hard to have a civil, calm conversation with constituents when they're busing protesters in to disrupt your town hall meetings.
So evidently, if people take a bus to a town hall meeting, it makes them more likely to disrupt.
Well, with all due respect, I've been to some of Paul Ryan's town hall meetings, right? When he still had them, which I realize, you know, it's a sign of my age. but he was controversial in the past. He's been going after Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid for a long, long time. And there weren't busloads of people there. There were a lot of people from his district. And here's the interesting thing. There are parts of his district that are pretty far from other places. It would be a bit of a long bus ride. And he's not doing town meetings in Republican-leaning towns in the middle of Walworth County. And so this fantasy that somehow, if he did have a public meeting, he'd be overwhelmed by people from outside the district, it's just wrong. He'd be overwhelmed by people from inside the district.
Well, he was quite emphatic in 2009 that members of Congress should be doing this.
He had to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was when he was thinking he'd have a good meeting, you know, rather than one that was critical of him. And here's the interesting thing. I do know of a busload of outsiders that did come to his district a couple of years ago. So I understand what he's you know, that obviously is a concern. I only know of one busload of outsiders, personally, and that was the nuns on the bus.
He didn't like that.
It is true that a group of nuns from around the country did come to his district to plead with him on the basis of Catholic doctrine, Catholic justice and Catholic teaching, that he should abandon his approach on health care.
You know, it's I have seen him, how he goes to Mass now at St. John's Vianney's on Racine Street in Janesville. He has Secret Service around him. He comes in through the side door, and he leaves right after communion. He leaves right after communion so he doesn't have to talk to people. So he's like in and out.
I'm glad he's still going. He's got to at some point ruminate a little about his actions. But, no, I can tell you that I believe today, I hope I've got my number right, I think 7,500 nuns wrote a letter to Congress saying that the Republican proposals for overturning the ACA and replacing it with, you know, essentially an assault on health care wrong, that they're morally dubious.
I ask this question seriously. How would you compare Paul Ryan to the other speakers that have served in modern lifetime?
He's bad. I mean, he's on the low end. He's probably the worst of the bunch. You know, Gingrich was a pretty complicated character, but at least people generally accepted that he was smart, although perhaps in not the best ways. And so I think you got to really. Boehner was actually, you know, may not like him, but he's very competent in a lot of ways, and actually tried to get a few things done. And so it's really a race between Paul Ryan and Denny Hastert for who was the worst. And because Tom DeLay was running things when Denny Hastert was, you know, the...
Yeah, Tom DeLay was really the speaker.
Yeah, and DeLay was a horrible person. It's a tough call.
And by the way, Tom DeLay still is a horrible person.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a really tough call on if we accept that DeLay was the speaker, so it's Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay versus Paul Ryan. And so I guess we got to go to the final level. I think that Denny Hastert was more liked and respected. So I'd say Paul's probably at the bottom.
Let me, it's real clear, his statements about Trump and his excuses for not doing a listening session are false. They aren't genuine. They aren't honest answers.
Yeah.
Let's go to Donald Trump and how he's been behaving. He went to something that's been going on for 80 years. Many presidents have spoken to the Boy Scouts at their yearly jamboree. Yeah. And this time it was in West Virginia. Here's a story. Here's how the CBC is covering it.
What disturbed me was that President Trump turned this speech into a campaign-style political rally.
I feel like it's completely unacceptable.
And there was a similar reaction online. Disgusted, shocked, wholly inappropriate, wrong.
Who the hell wants to speak about politics when I'm in front of the Boy Scouts?
Considering that opening line, you'd think his speech would gear towards his audience. You'd think.
Fake media, fake news. Do you remember that famous night on television, November 8th?
Hating the media, reliving election night, classic Trump soundboard. But these are mostly children, so consider these statements.
Our economy is doing great. To you and all of the other millions and millions of people that came out and voted. And you know, we have a tremendous disadvantage in the Electoral College.
He even took a shot at his health secretary.
And hopefully he's going to get the votes tomorrow. Otherwise I'll say, Tom, you're fired. I'll get somebody.
It's very upsetting because I don't want these political things to be getting into the Boy Scout events that I attend.
So far, the Boy Scouts organization itself isn't going near the controversy, but said the invitation is a, quote, long-standing tradition and in no way an endorsement of the president.
So you look at the, I think the Washington Post had a list of the topics, Harry Truman and Franklin Roosevelt, spoke to the Boy Scouts about. Quite a stark contrast.
Oh, it's, well, there's a number of contrasts, right? For one thing, some presidents have been Boy Scouts. But I do not believe this guy was. I was a boy. Were you a Boy Scout?
No, I was in 4-H.
Totally noble endeavor.
I was a lucky leafer.
Lucky leaper?
Leafer.
I was a cub and a weebelo, and then a Boy Scout.
Well, my 4-H troop was called, I don't know if you call it a troop, group, club, you know, for the 4-H, you know, the four-leaf clover, lucky leafer. Mm-hmm. And I was elected treasurer of the Lucky Leafers. Okay.
And was that at the point when it sink fell apart?
I was a better treasurer than our Bud Dwyer. Okay.
Oh, well, leaving that aside.
Had you expected to hear his name on the podcast today?
No.
Nope.
I did not.
Didn't think so. Good.
But here's the other thing. I, as a Boy Scout, it was a very interesting thing. I was a Boy Scout in a period when there was a lot of division in America, a lot of political sturm and drang. I can honestly tell you, I don't know what the politics of any of my leaders in the Scouts was. And I knew other folks. You know, and I was interested in politics even as a kid. But there was such a resolute effort to make it apolitical so that everybody... You know, I shouldn't say everybody because there's been real concerns about who gets in and who doesn't. But so at least in our little town, you know, everybody feel welcome in the Scouts. And I think what Trump did there, apart from the absurdity of some of his statements and, you know, the sort of lack of self-control, one of the things he did there was identify the Boy Scouts as something much more political than they are. And or than they should be, and that's a daunting thing because you know my mom's been involved with Girl Scouts forever, and you know one of the things that she has always emphasized is that the great thing about Girl Scouts is that we brought together all these people of different backgrounds from different communities. My daughter's a Girl Scout. She went to a thing up at the Dells not long ago with like 1,000 girls from around the state, people from just every corner of the state. And I just, the idea is you sort of keep politics out of that.
You know, you ought to have one of the reporters from the Capital Times ask the governor what he thought of that address.
He's an Eagle Scout.
The governor was an Eagle Scout. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of Eagle Scouts. Actually, in politics, there's quite a few Eagle Scouts.
Uh-huh.
Was Jeff Sessions an Eagle Scout?
I think he was.
I think so, too.
Okay.
So what we're establishing is,
yes, and it's interesting. He was absent from that event.
Yeah, well, he's absent from everything now. I think if they had an Alabama, you know, like flag dedication, he wouldn't be invited. It's getting a little weird. Yeah. By the way, as long as we're talking about Trump stuff, and we can certainly keep on the Boy Scout thing for a while if you like, but as long as we're talking about Trump stuff, what about that thing with the rolling of his eyes?
Oh, yeah, they
asked about Sessions. You can't reproduce that on a podcast, but that was sort of amazing.
Well, there's plenty of time to talk about Jeff Sessions.
I'm not trying to take us there.
Okay, so that was in West Virginia. Not far down the road, he was in Youngstown, Ohio last night.
Indeed.
And he was making some very professional statements there as well.
Sometimes they say he doesn't act presidential. And I say... Hey, look, great schools, smart guy. It's so easy to act presidential, but that's not going to get it done. In fact, I said, it's much easier, by the way, to act presidential than what we're doing here tonight, believe me. And I said, with the exception of the late, great Abraham Lincoln, I can be more presidential than any president that's ever held this office. That I can tell you.
By the way, John Meacham does not agree with that.
Well, first off, I want to attest the fact there was nothing presidential about what he did last night.
Nothing.
I'm going to agree with him on that one. However, I want to offer...
But he could be presidential.
What's that?
He could be.
You know what? I actually think, you know, occasionally he's made some effort at it. the problem is he doesn't seem to be able to hold the position, yeah, right? You know, like stay in position as acting presidential. But I'm going to offer this notion. While I have incredibly high regard for Abraham Lincoln in a lot of ways, and do think that Lincoln was very presidential, call me, say whatever you want about me, but I think Dwight Eisenhower was quite presidential. You know, I would even go so far as to say John Kennedy was quite presidential, and so was Ronald Reagan, and I think Barack Obama, probably maybe since Lincoln in some ways, in many ways, was a truly presidential figure, and you know, less of the pure politician than some presidents, more of a, you know, someone who filled that role. So we've had plenty of people in that office since Lincoln who were very presidential, and it's kind of shocking to me that Donald Trump is so self-absorbed, so lost in himself, that he would find that only Abraham Lincoln was his equivalent.
Here is here is one more clip, and I you don't have to give a long response to this. It's just a little accentuation point.
Every single president on Mount Rushmore. Now, here's what I do. I'd ask whether or not you think I will someday be on Mount Rushmore, but no. But here's the problem. If I did it joking, totally joking, having fun, the fake news media will say he believes he should be on Mount Rushmore. So I won't say it, okay?
You know, he used that as a way to bash the media, but this is a guy that hung pictures of himself at golf courses on the cover of Time magazine.
Well, big Time magazine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, I mean, let's just step back and ask a simpler question. How many presidents do you think would even think about that? Right? You know, it's sort of like, I think a number of our presidents have been too humble to imagine that they would be. And other ones are too busy to think about that. But clearly Trump has put some time into the issue as he's 6 months into his presidency.
So let's take a break here. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at SliesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
John Nichols with us, Capital Times and The Nation podcast at SliesOffice.com, where workers always come first. You saw the people that were standing behind Donald Trump at that rally in Youngstown with their gaudy outfits and holding up the signs and laughing and just having a blast. I was thinking things about those people that probably don't reflect well on me, because I'm really beginning to develop a real distaste for his supporters. Is that wrong, John?
I think a little wrong. You know, and I'd probably be the last one holding out a little hope for him. I don't care what people wear. You know, people wear different things in different places. And I also don't much care where, you know, what their signs say and things like that. You know, I may be offended by it in some way, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I think that the people who show up for Donald Trump rallies are pretty desperate, and they've got a lot of need, and they're hoping that that somehow he'll give them something. And the problem is that as they're at that rally cheering him, I guarantee that some of those people you were looking at, Sly, were losing elements at the risk of losing elements of their health care that they're going to desperately need.
I have no doubt there's some validity to that, but I think we've created maybe an over-exaggeration that all Donald Trump supporters are poor and blue-collar and hurting.
Oh, they're not.
I think there's a lot of people in the Trump coalition that are just mean. They're in middle management. They're, in some cases, they're small business owners. I think the thing that they're really scared of is the United States of America not being a white majority country, John.
Oh, I think there's you know, I mean, I think in the Attorney General you've got that issue, right?
get to him in just a second.
But look, that may be the case, but and it may be middle management or even middle class and stuff like that. But I think they're still, by and large, really scared people. They're afraid of the changes that are going on around them. And I'll be very blunt with you. I remain deeply dissatisfied with the attempts of the Democratic Party to address those changes and to offer an alternative. And so before I get too angry at the Trump backers, even though I may disagree with them very passionately, I'm going to still argue that we need a much better debate about the future. And better alternative.
And tomorrow we will talk about that with Congressman Pocan. Let me play a clip of Donald Trump at the press conference where he came out and he was with the president of Lebanon or the prime minister of Lebanon. Here is Donald Trump talking about his attorney general.
That was the president today. Oh. And here was the very first thing
that would be
that candidate, not one word.
I am disappointed in the Attorney General. He should not have recused himself almost immediately after he took office. And if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me prior to taking office, and I would have quite simply picked somebody else. So I think that's a bad thing, not for the president, but for the presidency. I think it's unfair to the presidency, and that's the way I feel. Thank you. I want the Attorney General to be much tougher on the leaks from intelligence agencies. I told you before, I'm very disappointed with the Attorney General, but we will see what happens. Time will tell. Time will tell.
Only Time Will Tell, a song by Asia, came out in 1982.
All I can tell you is... First off, it's a bizarrely convoluted statement right off the bat. You know, it's a little hard to get to the heart of the matter there because it's obvious his disdain for Sessions is immense. But he clearly doesn't want to get rid of Sessions. And one of the things that I think is striking is the almost unimaginable disconnection between the Washington Press Corps and the story of how Trump got elected president. I think they still don't understand, you know, what was at the heart of this thing, or at least what was a critical component of it. And the fact of the matter is, there is a hard right base, obviously built around Breitbart, but with much deeper roots than Breitbart, that has favorites within this administration. And I just can't begin to emphasize to you, having done a book on this stuff and spent a lot of time looking at some pretty nefarious social media, these folks love Jeff Sessions. They love Jeff Sessions a lot more than Donald Trump. Now, not all of them, and I'm not suggesting that you know Trump is more popular or Sessions is more popular than Trump with the base, but there's a portion of it, and Trump can't afford to offend that portion of it. In fact, I'll give you a good example. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day. You know, it's you and Limbaugh. You know, and he was taking calls from people. And it was very interesting because, of course, it harkens back to the debates. Remember when Ted Cruz said Donald Trump had New York values?
I do.
The callers were saying, Donald Trump seems to be putting a lot of New Yorkers in his administration. And they were saying, as callers, I'd be a little offended if he got rid of a good man from Alabama and replaced him with a New Yorker. And I cannot begin to emphasize to you what a big deal that is. That deal.
So why is Donald Trump verbalizing this? If he were going to, if he were clever, which he sometimes is and sometimes isn't, but if he were clever and he wanted to get rid of Jeff Sessions, he'd wait for the Senate to go into recess.
Yep.
He'd make a recess appointment. But you know what? Richard Durbin and the Democrats and Chuck Schumer are ready for that now.
Well, because he talked and talked and talked about, right?
Just shut up.
If he'd shut up for a couple days. But you see, Sly, this is my point. I don't think he is going to get rid of Sessions. I think that Sessions has a base of strength that Trump cannot offend.
Well, in this morning's Washington Post, my new favorite, Rick Wilson, the political consultant.
Oh, you do love him.
He's just a riot. He makes me laugh. He gets away with saying on national television what I've gotten away with saying on radio for years. He wrote a piece called Jeff Sessions Has, and he doesn't like Jeff Sessions or Donald Trump. Jeff Sessions has done more for Trumpism than anyone. Trump still wants to ditch him. Trump shows no loyalty. And then he goes down the whole list of things that mean things that Jeff Sessions is doing. And he's right.
Oh, no. In fact, that is totally true. There's no doubt of that. But there's also the fact that conservatives are aware of that. They're conscious of that. And this is a big deal. It's something that people ought to be conscious of. Just as you or I, you remember when Obama was starting to frame things out. There were things that, you know, I liked about Obama. There were things I disagreed with.
You told me he was going to break my heart.
Well, I did tell you that. But I was more conscious of that because Obama was a president who I had more hopes for. And you know, some things I liked, some things I didn't always like. But I had many more hopes for him. And so I watched, you know, what he did and who he appointed and stuff like that very closely. Trump, I don't have a lot of hopes for. But I think that people on the right are watching Trump very, very closely for what are you doing, who are you appointing, all this stuff like this. And Sessions is giving them more of what they want than anybody else in that administration.
All right, let me just finish with this, and I just want a short answer to this. I don't even know what I want you to answer on this, but it's just so amazing. This is Congressman Blake Farenthold from Texas.
The fact that the Senate does not have the courage to do some of the things that every Republican in the Senate promised to do is just absolutely repugnant to me. Some of the people that are opposed to this, they're some female senators from the Northeast. If it was a guy from South Texas, I might ask him to step outside and settle this Aaron Burr style.
And of course, the follow-up to that is actually only one of those female senators was from the Northeast. But Susan Collins was caught talking to Jack Reed on a hot microphone, talking about basically how ugly the man is and that he looked ridiculous in pajamas. Well, there's a picture of Farenthold in ducky pajamas with, I don't know, is he with like a calendar girl or a...
Yeah, he had another guy, right?
Yeah. He's in ducky pajamas.
Young women in negligees.
Yeah.
I think would be the way to say it. Yeah.
At what point did we get in our politics that a congressman would think it was okay to say that?
Well, I would say the point at which he felt it was okay to say that was at some point after the photograph of him in the ducky pajamas surfaced. Right? You know, because there's a certain amount of license that comes from getting away with stuff. And in my opinion, this guy's been out there for a long time. There's no question of that. And he always tries a tough guy persona.
And he's not.
I don't know. I don't know the guy. But what I can tell you is Joan Walsh, my colleague at The Nation, did offer to take him up on the duel. And she said, I hope I'm quoting her correctly, that she's never actually handled a gun, but she's pretty sure she could take him.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.